Thank you, Doug. As the title shows here, what I really want to, I guess, cover with you this morning is kind of a history of how no-till started and how it, and where we've advanced to today. And to kind of give you time to reflect back on what these early researchers and pioneer researchers and pioneer farmers that really developed the concept of no-till into what we know it has today, and we hope it certainly keeps continuing in the future. So I'm briefly going to cover with you the beginnings of no-till crop production that, as you'll see in a minute, really started back about 1959-60. Some of the issues that these early researchers and pioneers had to work through. It was not easy, and we owe a lot to their imagination and ingenuity and perseverance to develop what we know as no-till now into the technology that's used on many farms. And then kind of get into the technological improvements that we've made over the last 50 years in no-till, and then kind of give you an update as far as where we're at in no-till acres here in the United States today. It was actually back in 1959 that the first no-till plot was put out in Virginia. It was done by Chevron Company. And if you all recall back to Chevron, back at that point in time, I think they were the developers of this herbicide called Paraquat. And that's one of the products that really made no-till possible. In 1960 in Wooster, Ohio, no-till plots were developed, and they're still in existence today. And I was there for their 40th anniversary, and it's amazing when you look at those plots that are side by side of conventional versus no-till. And the no-till is actually a foot or two higher in elevation than the conventional plots. It's truly amazing. I don't have it on here, but in 1964, Lloyd Owen back here from the ARS Hydrologic Center in Coshocton, Ohio, they put some plots out in 1964, and they're still in operation today. And there's some remarkable hydrologic data that's available from those plots. In 1962, a farmer by the name of Harry Young worked with a researcher called Shirley Phillips, and he was the first farmer to plant a no-till crop in the state of Kentucky. And Young and Phillips, they're the ones that are officially credited for developing the no-till concept. That same year, there was a farmer in North Carolina, John Kilpatrick, that used this device to actually go and till a, you can kind of think of it as strip till, but he used this device to go and till a small zone, which would be later followed up with his conventional planter with no tillage in between the rows. So in North Carolina, this ingenious farmer found a way to develop the concept of no-till. These early adapters and the researchers that were working on this back at that time, if we would look at this equipment today, we'd go, oh my God, what were they thinking and what were they doing? But they had a lot of ingenuity. They had workshops where they could do equipment modifications, and they took some of these they were probably state-of-the-art planters at that time, but we would look at this as very primitive. But they installed a disc coulter in front of the planting unit, and in some cases a disc coulter and maybe a straight shank to open a narrow slit in that untilled soil where they could place the seed. Because you can see back at this point in time, they didn't have double disc openers. They were all these different types of shoes, and they needed a little bit more rugged device to get that seed slot open than we use today. But as time went on, things got a little bit better. But these early pioneers, they knew what they wanted to do, but they had a tremendous amount of hardships. Just, you know, as we talked about earlier here, just a moment ago, the planters that they had to work with were very primitive compared to what we're working with today. They had a very limited number of pesticides. I think when the first no-till came out, the only pesticide they had probably was atrazine. And that's why it was mostly only corn that was no-tilled in these early years. And they had problems with pests. They didn't really understand how different soils react to no-till and the management that it takes to establish a good crop. But little by little, they learned how to deal with things, and things got better. So why the big interest in no-till from NRCS? And, you know, as we look at this 75th anniversary of soil conservation, over the last 50 years, no-till has played a significant role in the conservation benefits that we've seen through our work in soil conservation. But with the no-till, we get a tremendous improvement in soil quality. And Martin Cipitello, I think you're back there. I think that's you here in the upper left-hand corner with your hand on this soil. And this is out at the ARS station at Coshocton, Ohio, showing 30 years of no-till versus conventional, and you can just see how that soil has improved without tillage and still growing tremendous crops. There's a tremendous energy savings, and that's going to be more and more important as we move into the future, a tremendous reduction in energy requirements with no-till farming. And then, of course, with water erosion. This is probably the best one. Between wind and water, no-till can really put the clamps down on controlling erosion. And it also improves the water quality. And in the case of where we've had wind erosion, Greg Johnson, where are you? It's going to work on that air quality a little bit. So, okay, why do producers, why were they even interested in no-till? Well, it really gets down to the economics. One, they know they can save some fuel. Two, there's a lot less in equipment investment with the no-till. And the man hours invested. If you can imagine going over the field 3, 4, and 5 times with tillage equipment versus one trip to plant, it's a tremendous savings in manpower. And then there's the conservation benefits, the erosion control, the water quality, and water conservation. And I want to just spend just a few moments with this water conservation. It's with no-till, when you're not tilling the soil, you're maintaining that residue on top, we can actually store more soil water. And in addition, when we add water through irrigation, we can actually get a more efficient use of that water. So I think as we move in the future, and Dr. Stewart is, I think you were alluding to here, water conservation with no-till is going to be a tremendous benefit and future we're going to need in the future. Okay, I mentioned the energy conservation. I won't go through this whole thing on detail by detail, but in essence, what this was a 202-hectare corn farm, and they went through all the tillage operations and harvest operations that it took to grow this crop. And what you can see is with mulch tillage, we had about a 16% reduction in fuel requirements, and with no-till, a 63% reduction in fuel requirements. So that in itself says a lot. Okay. There's things that has happened over the last 40 to 50 years that have kind of facilitated the adoption of no-till. And one is, it wasn't really until about the 1970s that we actually had planters that would do a reasonable job of planting no-till crops. The planters before that were kind of jerry-rigged, and so on, but it was really in the early 70s that we began to get some planters that were actually built to do no-till. Glyphosate came on the market in the mid-70s. It wasn't widely used as a burn down then. It was very expensive, but it was used to control some of those perennial weeds that were a problem. The 1985 Farm Bill, otherwise known as the Food Security Act, that required farmers to reduce erosion on highly erodible land. No-till proved to be a very economical and viable alternative for them to use to meet those Farm Bill requirements. And then in the latter part of the 1980s, no-till drills really came onto the scene, and that really allowed for more of the no-till of the small grains and soybeans, and at that point in time, no-till hit another acceleration point. And then with the more adoption of the post-applied herbicides, really helped address some of the problems that farmers are having with weed control after emergence, and that helped facilitate the adoption of no-till. Okay, the progression of no-till really kind of went from the plow to chisel plow to no-till. As they learned to manage residue a little bit better, they moved, they learned that they could manage a little bit, they found out that they could manage more and moved to no-till. And then, as we mentioned, the herbicides and equipment began to improve. So with these improved herbicides and pesticides and the planting equipment, all these things helped more and more farmers adapt to no-till. Progress or in no-till, there's still some barriers. And a lot of the farmers you talked to years ago, and even some today, they will list some of these as their barriers to why they're not using no-till or more no-till. But research and really the ingenuity of the farmers that make it want to work really prove that this is more of a perception than reality. Farmers adapt. They find, you know, they develop tools that make things work better on their machines. In this case, just a simple row cleaner that cleans 4 to 8 inches of row to allow more even seeding depth and plant emergence and a better yield. They've advanced into different types of no-till, strip-till, in-row subsoilers, primarily used in the South to break through those frangipans. We have no-till tobacco transplanters, and now we have more rugged no-till drills up in the Palouse to handle some of those high residue issues. The strip-till, what that offered producers primarily in the Midwest, it tilled a narrow band of soil, usually in the fall, and allowed that soil to warm up quicker in the spring to get earlier planting and quicker germination. No-till now isn't just those corn, soybeans, and wheat. We're into the tobacco, pumpkins, no-till cotton, peanuts, and there's more than that. We've advanced quite a bit over the years. There's been a consistent rise in no-till acres, and as of 2009, using the ARMS data, there's roughly 35% of the cropland acres in the U.S. that are no-tilled. In the early years, when we started keeping track of conservation tillage acres, mulch till, those dark blue lines, kind of, there was a lot more of that than no-till. But as we begin to get to about the late 1990s, 2000, we have equal amounts of mulch till and no-till, and now no-till is surpassing conservation tillage. For the future, we need to really continue to promote more no-till. We need to promote more cover crop use to facilitate no-till. And I think as we see fuel costs increase, labor costs increase, we're going to see more of an opportunity for no-till. The soil quality that we get is going to help our yields in the future, which will, I think, help the adoption of no-till. And just the new technology that will continue to come along in the ways of nutrient management, equipment, and so on, GMOs will help The last thing, we need continued research, education, and on-site technical assistance to keep no-till alive. Thank you.
Thank you.